You are listening to Breadbox Media, Community, Unity, Opportunity. Breadbox Media invites you to care to share. Join us in giving back to those who do so much good within our community. Learn more at breadboxmedia.com.
I'm gonna walk around heaven. I'm gonna walk around heaven. Barefooted, singing God's praise. I'm gonna walk around heaven. Gonna walk around heaven where there ain't no end of days.
Good evening, you're listening to Ramblings of the Crazy Faith here on Breadbox Media. And tonight on the show, I am so excited to have a blogger by the name of Joseph, who is gay and Catholic. And he gave a talk at the Courage Conference recently, so I kind of want to talk to him about that and a little about the reaction from some people in Catholic blogging circles. And I kind of just want to have a conversation. I think that there's this weird, there's a lot of weird misunderstandings of Catholicism. As anyone can see, anytime Pope Francis speaks, American Catholics kind of go crazy. The secular media runs with misrepresentations, and Catholics start freaking out and trying to explain exactly what it is that the Pope is saying, and getting a little bit upset with the Pope. And I think that it also goes the same whenever someone speaks out on the issue of homosexuality, of transgenderism, whatever it is. We're so scared of talking. We're so scared of sounding like heretics or of coming off as not being obedient to our faith, when and the reality is we should all assume that everyone, that we should assume the best of intentions on everyone's part. We can't assume that someone is being malicious right off the bat, you know? So when someone says, I'm an obedient, chaste Catholic who is gay, we have to take their word for it. I mean, and we can't freak out, and we can open a dialogue with people who are dealing with this issue. I see this as for myself. People talk about immodest women all the time on social media. I see Catholics all the time just talking about immodesty, sharing pictures of half-naked women, and making snide remarks about it, and don't they know, and all this stuff. Well, no, they don't know. As a woman who dressed very provocatively for a lot of my life, I worked at Hooters for 4.5 years, I can tell you, no, they do not know. And you telling them that isn't going to help them see what the problem is whatsoever. I had plenty of Christians tell me. I had feminist protests outside of Hooters that I worked at. I had Christians tell me all the time about how I was dressing and talking and acting. And none of it helped me because it was coming from a place of self-righteousness, and nobody listens to that. You know, the lost sheep definitely don't listen to that. So anyway, I just think that we're kind of a little scared sometimes to have these conversations with people and to listen. And listening is a big part of Christianity. I was reading the Rule of St. Benedict yesterday, which kind of fell into my lap, which is kind of a long story, and I'll tell you about it after our interview. But the Rule of St. Benedict, a lot of it is about listening. And I think that there's something very valuable in listening to people and listening to their stories. We don't have to validate their sins, the same as people don't validate our sins when they listen to us. But we can still listen to them and have conversations with them. So I hope that you enjoy this interview. And I hope that it kind of answers some big questions. And if not, at least it's entertaining. So here is my interview with Joseph. Sorry. My brain is still not quite dealing well with the change from Real Life Radio to Breadbox Media. And you can find all of our shows, speaking of the change, you can find all of our shows at breadboxmedia.com. And you can like us on Facebook and keep up with all of the news. We're going to have a press release that explains the change more thoroughly. But for now, just know that you can go to breadboxmedia.com for any information that you're looking for and for all of the shows that we're streaming on the app for the Real Life Radio app before. And so, yeah, my brain's not really functioning well with that. And I'm in school again. Because I didn't complain about it enough the first time. So I'm just kind of, my brain's kind of, it's kind of fried. So it's nice to have a guest on the show so that I can have someone to talk to. So I hope that you enjoy the interview. And please find me on Facebook and on Twitter and let me know what you think of it.
Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm great. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks so much for being on the show. You caught my attention on Twitter when you were at the Courage Conference. What was the name of the conference exactly?
Oh, goodness.
Or not exactly, but kind of.
Yeah, more or less exactly. So it was, I think, called Loving and Accompanying Our Brothers and Sisters with Same-Sex Attraction. I think that was it.
And what was the feeling that you got? What was the purpose of the conference, and then what were some of the, you know, some of the things that you were thinking of while you were there?
Oh, goodness, so many things. so the conference, as I understood it, was definitely pastorally themed, in the sense that it was, the purpose was to kind of gather a wide range of voices on the topic.
Right.
And by wide range, that's, you know, sort of an ambiguous phrase. What I mean is, as Dr. Janet Smith, one of the organizers, said at the beginning of the conference, the idea was, you know, all of the speakers were adherents to Catholic doctrine, but as far as anything else outside of that, it was kind of like all bets are off. And
which is typical.
You know, yeah, well, and it's a good thing, you know, because it's interesting. When I was younger and when I was just sort of trying to sort out where I was vis-a-vis Catholic teaching, you know, I looked at those famous, what is it, maybe two or three paragraphs in the Catechism that talk about homosexuality, and they don't actually say a whole lot.
Right.
Which some people see as a failing of the Catechism, or maybe of the Church in general. I'm not so sure that I would describe that as a failing of the Catechism, because I think it leaves a lot of room for basically the conversation that's happening now.
Right.
I'm glad, for example, that the Church has never made any definitive pronouncement about reparative therapy, for example. Not because I am opposed to reparative therapy, and not because I'm for it, but because it's the kind of thing where if the Church were to come out and say, yes, reparative therapy is good, and we're behind it, and then 10 years down the line it turns out to be really bad science, then, you know, that really doesn't look great. And
right,
we'll get around.
Exactly.
So,
yeah, and that, I think that maybe sometimes that's why the Church doesn't necessarily go into such details.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And, you know, in a sense, that's not really what the Church does, right? Because it's
right.
The question of reparative therapy is, I think, more of a scientific question than a moral one. I think some people see it as a moral question, in the sense that some people, I think, would say that homosexual men and women have an obligation to seek orientation change. But, of course, the Church has never said any such thing.
Right.
But I've totally strayed from your question, which is, what is this conference about? I'm grinding my own axes, as you can see. No, but
okay.
So, I mean,
it could be long-winded.
Oh, good. Oh, great. I'm great at being long-winded.
Yeah, exactly. It works perfectly for our show, for my show, anyway.
Oh, good. Anyway, so yeah, the conference was, you know, I think it was sort of a good mix between people talking from a theoretical standpoint and people talking from a practical standpoint, by which I mean You know, we had a couple people there who were psychologists and had done a lot of work sort of on the ground with gay men and women. I say gay, but of course that even that term is up for controversy, hotly debated in the Kalmbach piece. So shall I say same-sex attracted, because that's sort of, anyway, that won't rile any feathers. Except now I've already riled all the feathers.
Right. It just always depends on who, for me, it always depends on who I'm talking to. Obviously, if I'm talking to Catholics, I'm going to say same-sex attracted. But if I'm talking to people who are identifying as gay, I'm not going to tell someone how to identify themselves. Like, I'm not in that position in life.
Right. Yeah. And of course, if you want to be antagonistic, then you wait till you're around a room full of hundreds of Catholics and then repeatedly use the word gay. And then anyway, the point, so what I'm saying is, so, you know, they had some psychologists there who had done a lot of work with people with same-sex attraction, not necessarily from a reparative therapy standpoint, but just, you know, people who had a lot of clients who were same-sex attracted or who are.
Right.
They had people approaching it from a more pure theology standpoint. We had sort of I don't know if she would describe herself as an ethicist or what, but she was taking things from a sort of Thomistic standpoint. And then you had people giving sort of more personal testimony. That would include, you know, me and Eve Tishnet and Andrew Kaminsky and a few others. So basically all the people who are in this book. It was a pretty decent split between the pastoral and the theoretical, I guess.
And one of your tweets that got my attention was when you said it's kind of nice to be, or it's kind of weird to be in a room where people are talking about your condition that don't necessarily have it or whatever.
Right. Yeah, that was really weird. It was really weird and frankly upsetting. I don't think the fact that I was upset means that anything was necessarily wrong.
Right.
I think that, you know, for the people there, it was a little bit more, well, I want to say for most of the people there, because there were obviously a fair amount of sort of my fellow same-sex attracted people there. Go ahead.
I have that feeling a lot when people, I was sexually abused as a child, so when people who've never really been through it talk about it, I have that same feeling. It's not necessarily that they're saying anything wrong or doing anything wrong. It's just kind of like, you're telling my story. You know, you're telling the story you don't really know.
Let me give you an example of like a particularly sort of, this one got tweeted, I guess, by me. Tweets were made by me. I forget the gentleman's name. He was a Catholic psychologist, and he was talking about sort of really only one theory about the genesis of same-sex attraction. And, you know, he made clear it was only one theory. But what he's talking about, how in certain cases there's sort of in the childhood of the person, there's a detachment from the masculine, and specifically detachment from the main masculine figure in his life, which is his father, or, you know, in most cases his father. And when he's doing this point, he puts this slide up on the screen, which is Darth Vader and like Luke, and Luke's got his hand cut off and he's screaming, blah, blah, blah. And like, yeah, that's really funny. And most people at the conference when that slide came up left, but also I cringed because like, you know, this is bringing to mind memories from my actual real life, and from the lives of the people that I've known and gotten to know. So, yeah, it was really weird.
I really do understand, and I think that everybody will understand if it's something that is part of their story to that extent. You know, everyone has that one thing. Whatever it is, we all have it. And when it comes to that, we all know what that feels like. What we fail to do is understand that the person we're talking about also has that thing, you know?
Right.
Consider exactly. their feelings. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, to be clear, I'm not even necessarily saying that, like, oh, we shouldn't have used that slide because I was offended and blah, 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 blah. Like, no, but, you know, there's this visceral thing that happened in me and I registered my reaction to it and that's what happened. So, I don't know. It was weird. The conference was a sort of, a mixed bag for me emotionally. I was glad to have a chance to get up and say some of the things that I had seen. It was sort of emotionally weird to hear people talking in the abstract about something very personal. And then by the same token, there was a lot of things there that didn't sync up with my experience and that I didn't agree with, and even some things there that I thought were actually damaging. So yeah, there was there was a surprising amount of tension, I would say.
Yeah, and I think that that's just typical of this subject in general. Like, this subject is kind of, it's one of those things that just brings out the crazy and, like, it's just, like, emotional. I mean, it's just so tense, and that's actually a good word for it. Like, it's so dramatic, no matter what, no matter where you're talking about it, it kind of just brings out that. And I really, to this day, I still don't understand what it is exactly about homosexuality that does that. You can talk abortion. Abortion even gets a little heated, but not to the level of
speaking. Yes, yeah. I mean, I guess I have my own sort of theories about that. I think, I think it's really good that we are talking about it. Not only because homosexuality is that interesting in and of itself or that important. I mean, obviously, it's extremely important in the lives of the people who live it.
Right.
But as a matter of sort of general application, well, why are we talking about it so much? But at the same time, I think one reason it's become a hot-button issue is because it sort of exposes a lot of the ideas we have as a culture about gender, about sex, about what sex is for, about marriage. Like, all of a sudden, all these things are coming to the forefront. And
right.
for whatever reason, it took homosexuality to do that. So, I mean, as exhausting as it is at times, I'm really glad we're talking about it as a culture.
right.
And I'm glad that that courage and the Archdiocese of Detroit who put on the conference were willing to not only put on this conference and sort of like have people sort of preaching to each other's choirs or whatever, but also invite, you know, a wide range of speakers from a wide range of perspectives to really even, you know, sort of invite that tension that I was talking about.
Right, exactly. Because I think that it's just like anything else, that through that tension, we can finally get to the other side. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's kind of just part of life. And I wonder, like, you're Catholic, you are obedient to the teachings of the church, and you're also, you know, same-sex attracted, gay, and I think, like, do you get heat from both sides? Like, it's weird from both sides. Like,
Yes and no. I think, you know, I get the most heat from two specific groups. The one is sort of the usually somebody who's ex-Catholic, usually somebody who grew up Catholic and also gay and felt very rejected or discriminated against or just squashed, you know, or felt kind of mired in self-hate or was actually just downright abused or bullied, you know, all these things, and who very understandably, therefore, see the church as this entity which is just sort of trying to squash people and keep them from living their full selves. So I hear from those people sometimes who, you know, one guy wrote to me and just sort of repeated the word shame, shame, Joseph Freezer, shame, over and over again, and then he pasted it on some pictures and said shame. Anyway, that was really, I really shouldn't laugh because like this guy, for him, what I was doing was sort of betraying my own kind.
Yeah.
You know, complicit in the oppression of my own people. And, you know, I understand why that looks the way it looks.
Like, it's in a fight right now. Like, the fight is so, like you're saying, it's a tension and, you know, it's a culture war, and it's like everyone's kind of drawing the line and choosing their side. And me, I'm not gay, but I have a lot of gay friends. And the very first thing that I told a priest when I started RCIA was, I can't be Catholic. I love my gay friends, and I'm not planning on not loving them. And so for me, I'm sitting here kind of looking at both sides, like, I'm not picking either one of you crazy sides. Like, you know, I love you both. I love being Catholic, and I still love my gay friends, and I'm not going to choose.
Right. Well,
I can't imagine,
there's this kind of double barrier, because on the one hand, you have the barrier of doctrine itself, which is very, you know, can be hard to accept. I think ultimately there's a kind of freedom there, but just on the face of it, you know, we're asking people to do a very hard thing or to not do a very hard thing.
Right.
So, I mean, That's the first barrier. But then the second barrier is from the sort of, I don't know if ultra-conservative is the right word, but maybe ultra, I don't know ultra what, I don't want to label it, but this certain, you know, group of people who just seem to think that, you know, as long as there's anything sort of a little bit gay left in you, then you just haven't gone enough. You haven't gone far enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's not enough that if you accept the teachings of the church, and it's not enough if you refrain from sexual activity, and it's not enough if you this, and it's not, you have to use the right words, and you have to, it's like, it's crazy, because on the one hand, like, I understand where they're coming from. I understand we want to maintain clarity of doctrine. On the other hand, like, we always have to consider who we're speaking to and who we're scaring away.
And the goal is to bring people. Yeah.
Right. I mean, people outside the church already know that the church asks gay people to be celibate. And if they also hear, well, not only do you have to be celibate, you also have to never use the word gay or, like, I don't know, listen to show tunes, then...
yeah, or whatever. Or be fabulous. One of my gay friends, like, don't they know gay people are fabulous? I'm like, well, you know, not really, because they kind of, you know, there's this fear. I clearly see it as a fear of, if I get too close to any kind of gayness, I am somehow going to accept, like, I'm somehow going to put my stamp of approval. One for me, who do you think you are that your stamp of approval is that great? One, and then two, like, no, that's not, if you love someone and they're openly gay, even in an open lifestyle, you know, you're not doing anything but loving this person. They know this clearly. All my gay friends, none of them assume that because I love them or go to dinner with them that I'm somehow less Catholic.
Right, right. Well, yeah,
and,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, people ask me sometimes, like, okay, my brother's gay, and, you know, he's actively gay, he's seeing a guy, blah, 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 blah. And basically, like, how should I talk to him about this? And I'm like, well, what's your relationship like? Have you talked about it at all yet? And they'll be like, well, yeah, I sat him down and talked to him about it, and also I sent him an article, and I also had a documentary by Courage, so... And it's just kind of like, okay, I think he knows where you stand at this point. maybe you have to, like, leave a little room for the Holy Spirit to do the work.
Right, right, exactly. Exactly. And that's another thing, is that when people say, like you're talking about the word gay, if someone says, you know, I'm gay, to me, I don't assume that they're having sex. Like, I don't assume that as straight people. I don't, you know, there's a little difference, because, like, none of my kids are going to come up to me and say, okay, we have to sit down, I'm straight. Like, so there's kind of a little bit of a difference, but at the same time, I don't automatically assume that if someone tells me, oh, I'm gay, that they're having sex, and that any of that is any of my business in the first place. And there's a serious lack of charity when it comes to the subject and that particular issue, where people assume, well,
Yeah, suddenly, because it's such a hot button issue, then everything becomes everyone's business.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
and this is not the case. Like, and you don't want people. I mean, it's nobody's business. If you say, I'm Joe, I'm gay, I'm obedient to the church's teachings, then as a Christian, it's my job to take your word for it. Because it's none of my business. Yeah, I can't say, well, I need proof.
Right. Yeah, no, a friend of mine, Matt Jones, who is Christian and gay, I saw him sort of duking it out. Well, you know, that's the wrong word for it, because Matt is just sort of ever charitable. Duking it out in the comm boxes with somebody who objects to this use of the word gay. And his point was that, you know, sort of imagine this conversation between Matt and Joe Schmo. And, you know, Joe Schmo says, like, hey, so how come you're not married yet? Are you gay or something? And Matt goes, oh, no, I'm not gay. And the guy's like, okay, well, so what's your deal? He's like, oh, I'm just not attracted to women. I'm attracted to men. And the guy's like, well, I thought you said you weren't gay. That sounds pretty gay to me, right? Like, it's like, so in other words, like, just the word in common parlance, I think people immediately understand by it that you're talking about a potentiality. That's why I think the word orientation is actually pretty good, because it's true that, you know, as I think John Paul II has pointed out in various places, you know, in the theology of the body, it's sort of a perversion to be attracted to a body part in general, rather than sort of that body part in the context of an individual person, right?
Okay.
Like that's an actual twistedness of sexuality, whether it's homosexual or heterosexual. But the point is, like, that's the ideal, right? And in practice, that's not how heterosexuality works. Like,
right.
You know, most of the straight guys I know will be like, yeah, I like to look at this or I like to look at that. And ideally, they're talking about some individual woman with whom they hope to populate heaven. But in practice, that's not how it works. And so, like, for people to expect that somehow it's not okay for gay people to talk about what gender they're attracted to in general, that's just a really weird double standard. Because, of course, you're sort of disposed to be attracted to one gender or the other.
Right. And the attraction isn't the sin. That's another thing that I have found myself, you know, duking it out is,
right. You know,
the attraction is not a sin. Like, when people, for the most part, I'm a weirdo, so I really do like to go to pride parades and be like the Catholic, you know, like that's my Catholic friend, and she's like observing, because I'm a people watcher anyway, and I love to ask questions and hear people's stories and hear what they're thinking. What's your process right now when you're, you know, doused in glitter on a float with a rainbow flag?
You like to go around asking for trouble, in other words.
Right, exactly. It's weird how open people are. If you ask them a question like that, they
right.
will tell you.
Yeah.
And so, I just don't, there's so much more to anyone. There's so much more to anyone than who they're attracted to. And if that's our argument, you know, you're more than your sexual orientation, well, then why don't we treat them as if they're more, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's really, it's bizarre to me that it's a difficult point for some people that, you know, that it's this distinction between the sinfulness of the action, but the moral neutrality of the attraction. I think I was listening to one of the speakers at the conference, and she, you know, she was a convert as well from evangelical Christianity. And she would describe herself as a former lesbian or maybe just, you know, formerly active, whatever. but anyway, the point is, you know, she's talking about, like, you know, if you became a Christian, and, you know, stopped these behaviors, which were problematic, But at the same time, she couldn't, for her, that wasn't really enough because she wanted to sort of expunge all of the sort of lesbian mindset from her head. She right. wanted to get attraction. Well, but here was something interesting which actually clued me in on a distinction that people were, I think, failing to make. She was like, she said that, well, people were telling me that the attraction itself wasn't a sin, but doesn't it say in the gospel that whoever looks on a woman with lust in his heart has already committed adultery with her in his heart? And of course, that's totally true. That's in the gospel, and that's right. what we believe, that if you look lustfully at somebody, then you are, that is a sinful action. But,
right.
But looking lustfully at somebody is totally morally distinct from being attracted to somebody. The one is active, the other is passive.
Right.
I mean, what it comes down to is it a matter of the will or is it a matter of the disposition?
Right. And it's a distinct difference that I think right. gets so muddled up, but only in this particular subject. Because if you're talking about straight Catholics, if you're talking about straight Catholics who end up getting divorced and annulled and remarried, you know, suddenly it becomes kind of, you know, softer when you're talking about those situations. Like, oh, you know, he fell in love with someone else and left his wife and children, but they got an annulment. Like, that doesn't really, you know, wash away the pain and the sin and the, you know what I mean? So it becomes like a softer, they become softer spoken about it. Whereas if you're
true.
Talking about someone who's gay, then it's kind of like, no, there's no, you know, there's no room for compassion or empathy or wrong.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, people are very sort of embattled on the issue, and I think they have sort of a defensive posture on the issue, you know, with good reason, because it is very easy to, you know, like G.K. Chesterton says, right, it's only a live thing which can swim against the stream, right? Dead things are the things that go with the stream. So it's, you know, it's very clear that as Catholics, we're called to be countercultural, but some people interpret that sort of counterculturalness as, well, anytime someone says anything that's like a little bit heterodox, you absolutely have to leave it or else you're not being a good witness and you're creating scandal. It's like, oh my God.
Or like, yeah, or, you know, I have to be the rudest person ever. And that's not being rude. It's like Trumpism inside the Catholic Church where it's like, I'm not being rude. I'm just telling it how it is. Like, no, you're being rude and not kind and not charitable and nobody's listening to you.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and people can say rightly that we can't water down the truth just to make
right.
it palatable to the modern mindset. But on the other hand, you don't, just because something's true doesn't mean you have to shout it at the top of your lungs at all times.
Exactly. I really do appreciate your point of view, and I can only imagine that sometimes, I mean, I get weird mail all the time, so I can only imagine that sometimes it could be maybe a little bit overwhelming, but, you know, I do appreciate your blog and your talking about this kind of thing, because I think that it's not going away. It's something that we as the church need to confront head on, and we need to
right.
know how to handle our, you know, brothers and sisters who, like you, are you're obedient to the church, you're living your faith, and we are called to support you the same as it's called to support us. And so I do appreciate you speaking out on it, and I hope that you keep doing that.
Thanks.
Even if it's a little drama sometimes.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you say we have to, you know, build bridges to people who are being faithful to the church and this and that, and that's totally true. But I mean, I don't know, one thing I've been thinking a lot about in this whole business is we have to think of the church as something with great treasures to offer to people, right? And, you know, the treasures we have are Jesus himself. The treasures we have are the sacraments. So I think what we really have to think about is how are we able to make those things available to anyone who needs them, which is everybody. And
right.
To me, that's always going to be the primary thing, you know, to give people the living water, which we've been entrusted with. That which means that the primary thing is not to make sure people are in agreement with us on all points before we sort of let them approach the gates.
Exactly.
So I don't know. I know just from having said that, people are going to think that I think that doctrine is not important. Of course, I don't think that.
It is important, but it's the road. It's not the end. The end is Christ. Sacraments in Christ. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. That's it. And when we lose sight of him, we lose sight of everything.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Jill, for being on with me today.
Thank you. I had a great time.
Me too. God bless.
God bless you too.
Bye.
When we come back, this is Ramblings of a Crazy Faith on Breadbox Media. Welcome back. You're listening to Ramblings of a Crazy Faith on Breadbox Media. I hope that you enjoyed my interview with Joe. He used to blog under a pseudonym, Steve Grisham, and that's where you can find him on his website, which is www.stevegrisham.com. I did that without looking, so you're just going to have to trust me on that and go look for it. Also, you can find him on Facebook, and I tagged him on all my stuff. I tagged him on Twitter. I don't know if that's how you say it when it comes to Twitter. And I did tag him on Facebook as well, so you can find him, like his pages, follow him on Twitter. I don't want to say he has a very interesting point of view because he's gay. He has just an interesting point of view because he's Joe. And I think that is the most important thing that we can all learn from each other, is that we each have our own personal experiences, our own life experiences, our own history, our own family, our own gifts, our own failings, that we see we are our own individual person. Everyone is different. Nobody is like you. Nobody is like me. Exactly. But we can all learn from one another, and that learning comes with talking to one another. If we're constantly, you know, afraid to enter in a conversation with one another, we're not really going to learn. We're going to kind of stick with what we know and stay in a bubble, and there's no real learning or loving done in a bubble. You might love the people that are in the bubble with you because you've accepted that they are worthy of being in your bubble. But at some point, they're going to let you down because we're human. At some point, you're going to disagree about something because we're human, and humans disagree about things. And then what are you going to do? Eventually, if you kick everyone out of your bubble when they disagree with you on something, you're going to end up by yourself. I mean, that is just the sad reality of the human condition. So we have to kind of learn how to love people we disagree with. That's actually, like, probably the greatest thing to learn in a human life, is how to love people that we disagree with. And how to love people that we, you know, who do things that we don't agree with. I think it's very codependent of people to only love people who do what they want them to do. It's not very healthy. I've been in therapy for a year and a half now, so I know that that's not healthy, because I've tried to unravel that mindset more and more and more. Also, another thing that I would like for everyone to take away from the conversation that I had with Joe is that it's okay to love your gay friends and to not assume that you know that they're sinning. The sin is in the homosexual acts. That's what the Catechism says. It's very clear on that that's the sin. Everything else is, you know, something that's interior, and in order for you to make a judgment that a person's in a state of sin or not in the state of grace, I guess I should say, it's rash judgment on your part and is actually sin. So take people at face value, even if you do know that they are actively living in a, you know, gay relationship, whatever that might entail, you can still love them without agreeing on their actions, the same as people love you without agreeing to the actions that cause you to sit in a confession line, however often you sit in a confession line, which I think should be monthly at least, from what I've been told in my spiritual direction. It should at least be monthly. And speaking of confession, you know, Pope Francis yesterday made an announcement that all priests could forgive the sin of abortion. So if a Catholic woman has had an abortion, has come to understand what a grave sin that is, and regrets her decision, and is looking for the forgiveness of God and reconciliation with God, she can go to any Catholic priest, have her confession heard, and be forgiven of the sin. Now, this is the thing. We are a Catholic church. It's universal. It's not an American Catholic church. Like, we're not the only... The American problems are not the only problems facing the Catholic Church. The American problems are very small compared to the global, universal Catholic Church. We're only a tiny part of the Catholic Church, guys. We're not the entire part. For most of the United States, all priests have this faculty because their bishops have given it to them. And it's the bishops place to give those faculties to their priests, and Pope Francis, being the Pope of the Catholic Church, is the Bishop of Rome. He is the bishop of all bishops, and so he cut the middleman out and just kind of gave all the priests this faculty for 1 year, which is the year of mercy, and so that they don't have to wait for their bishop to give them that faculty. Pope Francis has given it to them. It doesn't change teaching. It doesn't change the gravity of the sin of abortion. It changes nothing. It's not even a matter of Pope Francis letting anyone get away with anything either. It's a matter of Pope Francis opening the doors to the confessional for people to come and reconcile themselves with God. And honestly, the entire blow up is a distraction from the fact that if the Vicar of Christ is opening the doors to the confessional for people, it's probably a sign that God is giving us a warning to get our stuff together, to get ourselves to confession. It's kind of like God saying, look, guys, I love you, and I want you to come back to me, so I've told my representative to make that possible. And usually after mercy is judgment. I mean, I don't really know if that's what Pope Francis is thinking, because I'm not Pope Francis. I mean, I guess someone could ask him, instead of asking him stupid questions, someone could ask him, like, a really good question, like, hey, why are we having a year of mercy? Do you know something we don't know? That'd be a good idea, instead of asking him dumb questions that's freaking out about the answer. So, there's no changing the teachings of the church. There's no, leniency. All he did was give faculties to his priests, which is kind of his job to do. It's his to do if he wants to. I hope that everyone takes advantage of confession. I just went to confession yesterday. I have spent a week, I'd say a week, but maybe it was probably a little less than a week, but I have spent quite a few days really, really angry at God. And I can't even say that it's really gone away. But I did go to confession yesterday and kind of just laid it all out there. And I feel a lot better. I mean, it's not even necessarily a feeling. It's a knowing. It's a faith of knowing what happens in the confessional, that it's not a sacrament so that God can hear all your dirty details. He knows. He's God. He already knows exactly what you did. He knows what I did. He knows what, he knows the sins that are the secrets of our souls that even sometimes we don't face. So it's not a shocker to him. Anything we say in there, it's not shocking. It's more of a, here are my faults, and here's why they're wrong, and I'm very sorry. And then God says, okay, now let's get back to business. Like, let's get back to work. I love you. I forgive you. Now let's get back to the mission. And each one of us has a different mission or a different way to go about the mission. I guess maybe we all have the same exact mission, and that is to be a witness of Christ in this world. where we are, where we stand. I've said this many times, and it's so true, that that is what we're called to do. We're called to share our stories. We're called to live our lives. We are called to, whatever we're doing, no matter what it is, to be witnesses of Christ in that place. And we're all given different gifts to be able to do that. We're all given different gifts in order to be able to do that, to spread the good news of the gospel. And it might make, you know, the world a better place where we're at, but the goal of this life is to get to the world, to get to, you know, eternal life, to get to heaven, the life of the world to come. This world is going to pass away. And that's something that we always have to be really aware of, so that we can evangelize, and spread the gospel, which is the kingdom of God, and not this world being better. Like, sin's always going to be a part of this world. It's a fallen world. So I really do strongly urge you, if you're Catholic, to seek out the sacrament of reconciliation, confession, to examine your conscience, and to give a good confession, because you're not going to shock the priest, and you're definitely not going to shock God, and there will be a weight lifted off of you, whether you feel it or you don't feel it. It doesn't really change anything, and you can get back to being in a relationship with God. And I go at least monthly, if not more often than that. Another thing that I did yesterday is I went and got Benedict medal, and I had it blessed. So, you know, it's not a superstitious luck charm. It's a reminder when I, you know, it's a reminder around my neck to ask for prayers from the saints. That's what it is for me, actually. And why they're saints and where we're going. It's just a reminder of all of those things. So if you can get to a confessional near you, go do that. I highly suggest it. It's a great sacrament. And that's it for today. So I hope you enjoyed the interview. I hope you enjoyed the show. Make sure and go to breadboxmedia.com to get more information and to listen to other great, wonderful shows that we have here at Breadbox Media. I will see you tomorrow. This is Ramblings of a Crazy Faith on Breadbox Media. Yeah, there ain't no way.